This week at The Information, we held a new event, what will soon become a regular thing for us around startups. To be specific, it was called The Future of Startups. And after listening in on it, ladies and gentlemen, as I sit here today, I can confidently tell you that the state of the future of our startups is complicated. It is an interesting time to be running or funding a company these days. Whether it's working from home, thinking about whether Miami is right for you, or just examining how the company and its culture fits into the larger forces that are roiling this country, there are a lot of new questions for founders and investors that they're reckoning with. We had a handful of great panels over the 2 days, but this week for The Information's 411, we wanted to play some excerpts of two panels. One was a chat between the CEOs of Expensify and Cameo. It was moderated by one of our reporters, Zoe Bernard. The topic was whether or not companies should be openly discussing politics in the workplace or trying to keep things politics-free. And these two guys come from pretty distant parts of the spectrum. Expensify's David Barrett took a very strong stance in the days before the election when he sent an email to basically all of the company's clients making the case that they should vote for Joe Biden. I know this because I got one. We use Expensify here at The Information, and that email was really something. Meanwhile, we have Cameo's Steve Galanis, who is outspoken in his own way. But his stance is trying to keep the workplace safe for people of differing political opinions. So yeah, these two guys have very different stances, and as you'll hear, it gets fun. Then in part two, our editor-in-chief, Jessica Lessen, is speaking to Eric Schmidt. Eric is the former CEO of Google, and he's a legend in these parts, and he had a lot to say. The parts that we're playing here has Eric giving his take on why the antitrust cases against Facebook and Google feel more driven by politics and anger at the platforms rather than a real legal violation of antitrust law. That's Eric's opinion. First off, though, let's start with Zoe talking to David Barrett of Expensify and Steve Galanis of Cameo.
The first question that I had for both of you, 2020 was obviously a super crazy, very significant year in everybody's lives. But particularly, I think for founders, there was this moment that I noticed where founders felt the need to speak up about political issues and social issues in a way that maybe we haven't quite seen before. David, you sent a email to your customers right before the election suggesting that they should vote for Joe Biden. And Stephen, you've had some, you've said that you wanted to maintain a nonpartisan stance. What was different about the year 2020? And did you think about it differently as far as engaging in politics? David, do you wanna start us off?
Sure. I mean, I think 2020 was a different year just because the severity of the problems were so extreme. Like, I don't think we've really dealt with ever a president that was actively trying to dismantle the foundations of democracy using the power of the White House. And so I would say, if this wasn't a time to speak up, I'm really not sure what would be. I mean, this was as close to a coup as we've ever seen, including an actual violent attack on an active federal building, which hasn't happened in like hundreds of years. And so I think this was a really crazy and insane time that put everyone to the test and made everyone really reflect on how much do I care about democracy? And am I willing to actually do something when I'm called to action?
Stephen, I feel like you might have a counterpoint to that.
We've always tried to be a really inclusive place that encourages people on our workplace to bring their whole self to work. And, you know, from our perspective, we always are trying to nurture an open environment where people can speak their mind and ultimately bring their whole self to work and not have to conform to, you know, one set of social goals.
Can you maybe, David, walk us through like what happened right before you sent that email and like your thinking behind it? And was there any pushback from staff or did they know what was going to happen?
Yeah, so, you know, just so if for those who don't know, so basically I sent out a newsletter to about, you know, our 10 million closest friends, essentially saying that anything less than the vote for Biden is a vote against democracy, which I still believe. And I think history is really borne out, basically saying that, look, to vote for Trump, to vote for a third party candidate, to not vote, those are all the same thing. And they mean that I just can't be bothered to actually stand up for democracy. There's something else more important to me than democracy. And I think that it's a fine position to take, but it's an active position to take. And so we're saying like, look, this is the time for you to decide. Are you for democracy or are you for something else? And that was the message itself. Now, clearly not everyone agreed with that message, internally, externally, and so forth. The buildup to it internally was like, we do a lot of things. I mean, as CEOs, we make tough decisions all the time. Like, that's our job. And I think that great brands and great businesses are built by taking positions on complex topics and actually acting upon those positions. Weak, diluted brands, I think, basically just try to like make everyone happy. It's like, no, actually, sometimes you need to make decisions that don't make everyone happy. And that makes the people that you care the most about the happiest.
And I think, Stephen, you guys issued a statement on being nonpartisan. Is that right?
I have in the past. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, has there been any, I mean, what were the internal discussions like among employees?
Look, my employees understand, and we have 200 employees today spread throughout 26 states around the country. I recognize that I have employees that have all types of different views. And again, we try to foster an environment that allows civil discourse. You know, I think there's extremes of this. On one end, I think you see what Coinbase did, and you know what Brian Armstrong sent to his company is a mission letter. I think David's on another side, and I would say Cameo is definitely pretty centrist and moderate. I don't think anybody comes to work at Cameo because of our deep convictions in freedom of speech or anything like that. But we've always just tried to be inclusive, welcoming, and we'll help any of our employees, express whatever beliefs they see fit.
One thing that I thought was really interesting, David, after you issued the statement on urging people to vote for Biden, is that you actually saw a jump in revenue, right? And I believe you said that it became easier for you to hire. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, people want to work at places that take strong positions that they align with because they want to be part on the right side of history. And so no, we saw a huge, huge spike in job applications. Additionally, we saw a tremendous uptick in just basically like, new customers. Now, I think that not to say that we didn't lose customers. Like, I mean, Expensify is used by like everyone, like Breitbart, DonaldTrump.com, IvankaTrump.com. Like these were customers.
I mean, Stephen, do you think it benefits your company that people that come to Cameo use the product or, potential hires, they kind of know what they're getting into, right? They maybe, you've been fairly outspoken with your feelings politically and, it seems like people that come to Cameo are expecting a certain type of experience.
We have a very deep belief that, freedom of speech is really important. Our company raised a lot of money for the Biden campaign last year, for example, and people were asking, hey, why didn't you offer the Trump campaign the same opportunity? We also took that same opportunity to the Trump campaign and they ended up saying no. Another good example when, when the Capitol riots happened, I came out and sent a pretty scathing email denouncing everything that happened that day. And the next day at all hands, I had people asking me, hey, as CEO of a nonpartisan company, do you feel that that was an appropriate statement? And, like David in that case, I actually felt that I needed to speak out on behalf of myself. And I understand that some people have differing opinions than I did on that. But again, I would fight for the right of any of my employees to exercise that. I wasn't upset about the question. I welcome that question. We have three main guidelines on Cameo: no inciting violence, no hate speech, and no nudity. And those are the way that we've always looked at it. As we look at what people are doing on our platform, we don't feel that we should be in the business of policing what happens on other platforms. We didn't make that social contract of what's going on other platforms, but we feel really strongly that if people are violating our terms, it's well in our right to suspend somebody or kick them off the platform entirely.
I mean, just, I would say, I always have a kind of anxiety or, I don't know, the free speech defense feels like a cop-out, especially because no one actually, it's presented as it's like, look, I'll defend free speech to the death for anything, but with these certain exceptions, you can't show nipples. Like, what? So democracy doesn't make the list, but tits do? Like, I feel like we need to keep things in perspective. Like, what actually matters in this world? At some point, free speech is actually a weapon. It's a weapon to undermine society itself. And I think that we need people to call it out for what it is, rather than saying it's like, well, technically it didn't actually meet my, terms of service, whatever it is. It's like, that's all bullshit. Come on, we got to like man up here. Like, I think the idea that we'd have the Proud Boys on before, but not after, it's like, they didn't change. Nothing about them changed. They've been saying all the same shit the whole time. Like, we're just finally catching up to what they've been saying. And so I don't know. I feel like, you know, the world's improved by making hard decisions and having the conviction to act upon it while everyone else just equivocates. And I think as CEOs, as leaders, like, we are in a unique position to actually take stands and do things in the real world. And I think that the world's counting on us to do it. And I think we need more people to step up and actually say, no, there are people doing bad things, and we're going to use our powers to fight against those people, even if, you know, sometimes, yeah, we might lose some customers or whatever it is. But what we've learned is that in the long run, defending democracy is not a hard sell. It's bipartisan. Everyone loves democracy.
So number one, most of what you just said was pretty absurd. You just said earlier that you let Donald Trump and his campaign be on as a customer, but at the same time, you're professing to express a deep belief in democracy. And you're saying that only one side is right. And if you vote, democracy is literally the vote of the people. So you're coming to pontificate saying that there's only one side. And in this case, right, there were 76 million people that disagreed with that assertion. And, you know, I don't see you kicking every customer off that disagreed with you. So I just think it's an inappropriate characterization to talk about what happened on our platform.
Well, I'm not criticizing what happened on your platform. I'm criticizing that you didn't take a stand. I'm not saying that you should have kicked off every single Republican off your platform. I'm saying you should have used your voice to actually push in defense of democracy, like offering Trump and Biden equal access to your fundraising. Like, that just means, like, I literally don't care. As our official position on the company is that both of these parties are equally good for democracy. And I would say, like, I don't doubt that people believe that. I'm not saying that people don't believe that. I'm just questioning, why the hell did you believe that? And why would you use your power to do nothing, to explicitly aim for an apolitical stance? Like, it's just a wasted opportunity.
Steven, I mean, have you had any like founders that are maybe like earlier into the game turn to you and just be like, I don't know what to say. Like, this is a tough situation that we're in. Our staff, they really want us to make a statement, but like, you know, we're afraid to alienate people, whatever that statement may be.
Yeah, I would say this is probably one of the biggest conversations that founders had with each other over the last year. This was unprecedented in many ways. Backing up from politics for a while, you know, I think one situation that so many of us found deeply troubling was in the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd. You know, at Cameo, my employees came out immediately and were asking me, hey, Steven, what are we going to do about this? And we spent the weekend really thinking about it. And I think we came up with something really novel. We decided that instead of Cameo making a donation, what we were going to do was we were going to give $1 million bonus to our employees and let them put the money towards any cause that they wanted. And I personally matched $50,000 of my employees' donations to whatever cause they supported. Unlike David, I'm a first-time founder, so I didn't have enough money to end homelessness on my own. But you know, for me, this was, you know, this is a third of the money that I make in a year, and I thought that this was a really meaningful way. And for us, this matched our ethos at Cameo of supporting people, giving our employees, empowering them to make individual decisions that they felt could solve the problem in their own way, because there's so many different causes out there. And I always believe that if we put the ball in our employees' hand, that's going to be the best outcome for the company and ultimately for the collective values of my employee base.
If your employees had donated to the Proud Boys, would you have matched it?
I told my employees that I would match dollar for dollar of any approved charity that came out. So my legal counsel would have looked at that. And, you know, again, I wouldn't have known what the Proud Boys was at that time. But, you know, my legal counsel would have looked at it and they might have said, hey, this is not a charity that, you know, we want to support.
So you delegated the moderation of this to your attorneys?
I think as anyone would, right? I don't think it's carte blanche. I wouldn't have donated to the KKK, nor would you have in a similar situation. So again, I believe that you should be putting the ball in the hands of your employees, and I'm happy that I did it and it worked out great for us.
Good stuff, right? That was Zoe talking to David Barrett of Expensify and Steve Galanis of Cameo. And now for part two, let's cut on over to Jessica Lesson and her conversation with Eric Schmidt.
We have a new administration in DC, a lot of different tech policy issues on the agenda. I'm interested, from where you sit and from your conversations, what do you think are some of the most important issues that people in this virtual room should have on their radar in the year ahead?
Well, by far the most important thing is American competitiveness, and in particular, our ability to compete against the rise of China. Let's start with the fact that 20% of our stock market value is five tech companies. And let's understand that the Chinese model is a different model, and people are confused about it. In China, they have ruthless domestic competition, unbelievable competition and work ethic. And then the government picks a national champion, and then they become a very pro-China, pro-Chinese policy corporation. And we have to learn as a country how to fight the platform wars to win. And this thinking is completely missing in our political system.
What do you make of the DOJ's lawsuit against Google and the growing antitrust pressure that the US platforms are under?
So my personal opinion, which is not based in fact, is that the recent antitrust actions at the end of the Trump administration were largely political. This is not to take away from the fact that both the Democrats and the Republicans are concerned about the tech industry for different reasons. At the end of the day, it's social media. And the reason is that the politicians are incredibly sensitive to how their messages are treated and how people organize. And I think we can collectively as a community say to ourselves, we screwed this up. We allowed extremist groups, by the way, on both sides, to organize using tools that we did not anticipate would be used. Put another way, just to make as blunt as possible, there is a form of tech naivete and tech optimism, which has sustained our industry for 40 years and is amazing. And I'm certainly guilty of it as well. And it ran smack dab into how human beings actually work. And part of the reason this happened is that the people who are in the tech companies don't behave this way. And it was
they're
a shock.
They're not normal human beings now. So what do we do?
Whatever you want to say about tech people, they're not organizing to take over the government.
Yeah.
They're just not organized that way. They don't
think
that way.
New ones.
But new groups, Parler, the most recent one, are going to continue to show up. Because the internet essentially enabled, and we talked a lot about this, people to self-assemble. So then when people self-assembled in a way we didn't like, we complained. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the system is designed to allow over and over again, new and relatively unmanaged social platforms, which are powerful and important and generally a good thing. We haven't solved this problem.
Do you think that these lawsuits will change these companies in some way? It happened at the end of the Trump administration, but it's still happening, right? How will Google, Facebook, Amazon, Apple be affected?
So I was heavily involved against Microsoft in 1997. Yep. In their antitrust case. And it affected Microsoft greatly. It took about 10 years for them to recover from all the things. And frankly, when the lawyers start running these companies, everything gets way too conservative because lawyers mm-hmm. think that way and they're fine people, but this is why entrepreneurs are not typically not lawyers in the tech industry. It's a different skill set. So I always worry when the government starts going after big companies that they'll become less innovative, mm-hmm. that it's a disservice to the innovators within these corporations. As to the specific charges that I have seen, they don't make sense to me. This is some new case law that I'm not familiar with. So at the moment, I don't think that there's any evidence of guilt. But the important point here is, I think that there's a chilling effect from these investigations. And I'm obviously conflicted because of my history at Google. But overall, we need these big companies to be hugely successful. Instead of antitrusting them, if you don't like something that they're doing, why don't you figure out a way to regulate what they're doing? So if you're really upset about how social media works, let's come up with some rules that are broadly held that apply to everybody.
So Silicon Valley, I just saw a headline that said, there is no next Silicon Valley. I'm curious, from your perspective, what is happening here in terms of, are you seeing shifts in talent? What does that mean for the Bay Area?
Well, I've been in Silicon Valley since 1976. So I think I can speak authoritatively over 45 years that every generation of technology has predicted that Silicon Valley had peaked. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was at Sun, which was more than 25 years ago, we decided that there was not enough housing and office space in Silicon Valley to build a proper company. Sun was 1/100th the scale of Cisco, Apple, Google, and so forth at that time. So I think what we've proven is that Silicon Valley is still Hollywood. The movies may get made in Georgia, but the key decisions are still made in Silicon Valley. I'm sure that with the extraordinary and difficult price increases and traffic and so forth and so on in Silicon Valley, there'll be alternative places. But those who have written off Silicon Valley in the past have missed every boom. And every boom has been geometrically larger than the previous one.
So one thing that does seem like it's changed, at least in San Francisco, frankly, is anti-tech sentiment. Where do you think that will go?
Well, I come from the generation where people were really happy to have a job and where the wealth that I received and we created was seen as a blessing and a privilege to work in the companies. Employees are now much more active. They tend to have a polarizing view. It's important to remember that the tech companies are not all democratic and all liberal. And one of the things that's important about tech companies is that they be diverse in political view. When I was at Google, I spent a fair amount of time trying to talk to the Republicans because there were so few of them, I got to know them pretty well. You need to protect your minorities in a well-functioning organization. And I'm not joking, I'm serious. You have to actually take affirmative action, sorry to use that word, to make sure that they're protected and being heard in a cavalcade of other thoughts. So I worry that what you're seeing is you're seeing a monopolization of ideas by virtue of a particular political view, which I generally agree with. So I would like to see employees and companies disagree with me because I think that's a healthier structure. This may be a phase, this may be permanent. I know my friends in the industry are struggling with how to deal with it. And a CEO always wants to answer the question fully and precisely as though he and she knows everything. It's much better to appoint a committee that works for you and say, we have a committee and this committee is going to try to balance these interests. And we're going to try to find a solution that reflects the legal outcome, as well as the moral outcome, as well as the consensus of the group. And the person who's plugging you from the audience is not going to yield to that. They're going to keep at you because they're an ideologue on this issue. They may be very talented, but they feel very strongly about it. And they also may be very strongly wrong. So you've got to, as an executive, figure out a way to take that hit, if you will, and put it into some kind of a group that is empowered to come up with the right compromise between these various issues for the corporation.
That is today's episode. Thank you so much for listening and to all the panelists that participated in our Future of Startups event. Ariella Markowitz for producing. Have a good weekend, everybody. See you back here next week.